Recording in progress.
So welcome everybody to, let's see, fourth day of the retreat. And it's interesting on a retreat, sort of around the third and fourth day of a longer retreat, it starts to bite sometimes. So maybe stuff was coming up or it was a bit intense yesterday or today. You might find yourself finding stuff or reacting to stuff. So just being kind, doing what you need to take care. I think hold it lightly. Sometimes on retreat we think we need to be like really intense and push ourselves against any challenge that comes up, but actually sometimes we just need to, you know, give ourselves a break, have an insight, or something difficult's come up, and why not then back up a little bit, have a bit of fun, or just have a little bit of downtime. Anything that's come up will come up again. So just pace yourself, really. And particularly today, I mean, I know not everybody will make the whole day, but because it's New Year's Eve, we've got an extra session to see in the new year. So it might require a bit of pacing. Might require some extra late night snacks. But yes, it'd be nice if some of you, or all of you, can be there. So, at the still point of the turning world, this is our retreat theme. And I think on the first day I was sort of looking a little bit about trying to, how do we get to a place of stillness within the turning world? And we've been talking quite a lot about connecting more with stillness, spaciousness, silence, contentment, and also some of the sort of like dynamics or the relationships between stillness and movement, silence and sound, which I think is all these tensions we have, the inner, the outer, all those dualities. I know I probably bamboozle a lot of people talking about emptiness on that first day. But just let go of worrying about emptiness. Emptiness is only emptiness. And yet it's really drawing me, so I keep on wanting to go there. So, or at least to what the kind, I think the thing is that when we get into those places of stillness, when we enter that inner quiet silence, create that spaciousness within and without and that connectedness, interconnectedness, then naturally what often arises is more of a state that we might associate with wisdom, and we might have more insights, more awareness, more compassion, different kind of energy. I mean, there's so many things that I am tempted to say in response to Pranyanita's talk. But I think for me, I'm feeling very drawn to exploring equanimity today. So in fact, that at the still point of the turning world, there is that idea that there's all this stuff happening around us. So it's not just that everything is still. But also within us, there can be a lot of stuff happening in that stillness. And sometimes, how we get to that equanimity will involve including everything. So all the things that are really challenging, all the difficult emotions, thoughts, the suffering needs to be included, but not just focusing on the suffering, but also being aware of all the positive stuff and the joy and the potential and the creativity. Equanimity as Upeka is one of the Brahma Viharas, which is seen as well, in a way, the culmination of metta when it's flowering at its greatest, developed as its greatest. And when metta comes into contact with suffering, we're told it transforms into compassion or karuna. And when it comes into contact with positive qualities and good fortune, there's the gladness, the sympathetic, empathetic joy. And then we're told that when you've got both of those there in your awareness, and you've got that dharmic perspective, which includes being aware of, well, we've been talking about the three lakshanas, you know, dukkha, impermanence, insubstantiality, everything being in process all the time. Then you get upekkha arising when metta meets reality. Reality with a big R, you know, when we see things, experience things as they really are. But again, there's always a continuum with that. We can have moments of insight, awareness, glimpses into reality on a very mundane level, just as much as if we were fully awake and enlightened and the Buddha's in that state all the time. But yeah, so upekkha is very much seen as a quality or an expression of the awakened, enlightened mind and heart, and limitless, like all the other Brahma Viharas. But I don't think it's, you know, unattainable for us. I think we can cultivate equanimity in our lives in all kinds of little ways. And the more we do that, then the more it can develop and become more part of who we are, part of our natural way of being, our natural response to our experience, whether that's our inner experience or our experience of the world. Nanaponika Thera, who wrote some great stuff on the Brahma Viharas, I really like his definition of equanimity, where he says it's a perfect, unshakable balance of mind rooted in insight. So I think it's important to have that rooted in insight, because it's having that dharmic perspective. When we stop fighting about the fact that there is dukkha, there is impermanence, that we don't have a fixed self, nothing is fixed, everything is process. When we stop trying to fix samsara, because we've got that perspective, there's that big letting go, and being able to, in a way, respond in a different way. And a lot of it is about being able to sit with whatever's there without those reactions of either craving or aversion, without all the views, the habits, the conditioning, the underlying ignorance that we have. So we have talked a little bit about that working with the aversion and the craving, but until we're enlightened, those are going to be there, you know. So don't worry about it. Don't blame yourself about it. Just notice that they're there, and maybe we can work with it. But yeah. And there's the paradox between just being open and allowing things to arise and pass away and not trying to achieve things. And yet we do need to do some directed practice, you know. Why are we on the path? How can we be on the path if we're not actually aligning ourselves with our values, our intentions, our aspirations, and putting some effort, some energy into it? So with all these things, there's that paradox between doing and not doing. I think that in one of the Padmasambhava bits of advice to someone, he was saying about since the tranquility of Shunyata is the foundation, by forcefully turning your mind to emptiness, you chase misconceptions. I think that's quite interesting, that if we try and force ourselves or direct ourselves in quite a willful way, that we want to, you know, see into emptiness, we want to have wisdom, awakening, insight. We're chasing misconceptions. It's a whole misconception in a way that we can achieve or see into emptiness, shunyata, enlightenment, and all those things. Which brings us back to the Heart Sutra again. You know, attainment too is emptiness. And that also all the things on the path, all the practices don't exist either, we see. So that paradox of yes, they do exist, and no, they don't exist. And it's more about what we do with them in our minds and our relationship to them, I think, is at the core. And something about when the mind is still and tranquil and open, then we create that space where stuff can arise. And when we create more space in our lives and not busy all the time, then again we can get into different states, different things can arise. But we're not going to be in that place the whole time, you know. Even if you went and lived in a monastery or a convent or something for years and years and years, there'd still be lots of stuff happening, lots of tasks, lots of busyness. Certainly I can testify to working at a Buddhist center is not necessarily a place where you have a lot of quiet and stillness. There's always lots of stuff to do, and you have to work just as much as everybody else with working with patterns around busyness and getting caught up with things and identification and creating the space, you know, for practice in your own personal practice, the quiet spaces as well as the busy spaces, because you can definitely practice engaging with people, engaging with the world, doing things, and that's just as important, I think. That's where the ethical dimension comes in. But we also need, I think, the quieter spaces, the meditative spaces, the reflective spaces, and the devotional spaces, I think. I know I keep quoting Paramahansa, but he is a mate and we've done loads of retreats together, but I know he said something around you can't think your way to insight, you can't think your way to awakening. And I think often we want to make that shortcut. You know, people like the idea of insight. People like the idea of going beyond the self and all that. And you get people who've sort of read about it and they want to immediately come along and practice and get to that place of no self. And I think there's a real paradox there that actually I think we have to be completely familiar with all the minutiae of ourselves, all the difficult, all the messiness, all every aspect of ourselves in a way before we can let go of it. But again, it's a different relationship. Going back to Nanaponikathera, he talks about how equanimity, the insight that equanimity is based on, should be around the teaching of no self or anatta. And when we're talking about the three root poisons of aversion, craving, and ignorance, often that ignorance, that delusion is understood as this delusion about us having a self and having a fixed self. And we experience ourselves as a self, though, so there's nothing wrong with that. But it's in a way, it's just having everything provisional, being aware that that's not the whole reality, and loosen up some of those attachments that result from when we let our ego be in charge, which our ego always likes to be in charge and feel it's the boss. And we're quite used to letting it do that, I think. So in a way, to get to that place of equanimity, there's a certain sort of loosening around the idea of me and mine. And because of the me and mine, the way that we get into clinging to things or pushing things away because we want to make things the way we want them, we want to have our particular life world the way we want it to be, and all those thoughts of ourselves. And when we start to loosen around those ways and get into sort of more being aware of a bigger perspective, including others, I think it's quite interesting that sometimes we, I'm trying to think how to express it. It's like when I'm in a sort of like small mind, very concerned with my own concerns, very ego-based, and I want this, I want that, and I can get very self-protective. I can get very fearful about things not being the way I want them to be, or they might be the way I want them to be right now, but then they won't be later on, or something might happen, or there's this thing happening that I really, really don't want happening, and I just, you know, and I kind of close in around it, and I don't have much equanimity. But when I can go beyond myself, in a way, and that doesn't mean ignoring myself, that means having myself there, but also connecting with others in the world, then I have more stability, I have more equanimity, and those things don't bother me in the same kind of way. Paninita was talking about becoming a big container, you know, which is another sort of metaphor, I suppose, in a way, of what we could call equanimity. Because when we've got a little container, it can only have a little bit, but when it's big, 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 it can contain everything, doesn't it? Like our minds and our hearts. They are limitless, actually, but often we don't experience them in that way. And then, if we can be a bigger container, then we can, then things have less effect. I think the Buddha did an example somewhere, and I'm not quite sure where it is, about, well, if you were to pour, you know, salt into a glass of water and try to drink it, it would be very unpleasant and probably, you know, not that good for you. But anyway, it would be very hard to drink, yeah. But if you were to put an equal amount of water into a lake, and then from that lake have a glass of water, you would probably not taste it at all, yeah. And it's, can we, in a way, become more like the lake than the little glass of water, so that the difficult things that happen in life, all I think that have already happened, all the things that we're dealing with, we are able to still have them, they're still part of our experience, but there's much more to counterbalance it. It's more diluted, in a way. It's not the not as concentrated, not as all-pervasive as it was. So why am I saying all of this? Well, I think for me, there is that inclusive quality of turning towards whatever is within myself, all the bits of myself that I haven't necessarily been that proud of or liked or wanted, and being able to allow them to be part of me, see them as part of me, and integrate them as part of me. So again, Paninita was talking quite a lot about integration and that link with Amoghya Siddhi, who's very much about integrating all union of all opposites, all energies, and we can do that on a personal level, yeah, rather than try to immediately make ourselves this wonderful, perfect spiritual being, yeah. We can just be ourselves on the path, practicing as best we can, and have trust that if we are practicing the Dharma, that will have an effect. If we're practicing ethics, if we're practicing meditation, if we're reflecting on the Dharma, that will have an effect, especially if we keep doing it over time. So the idea of practice, spiritual practice, is that one keeps on doing it, that we're not there yet. You know, we're probably a long way from that, but actually if we put in the time, if we put in the hours, if we have that continuity of purpose and practice, it can take us a long way. And the Buddha says it can take us all the way to enlightenment and awakening just as he did. But how often do we do that? Maybe we do it for a little while and we get discouraged. Or maybe we doubt ourselves and don't even start the path. Or maybe we keep going for quite a long time and then things get really difficult and then we kind of give up. Or again, we doubt ourselves or we doubt the practices or whatever else it is. And some of that is because of not being able to deal with the difficulties that come in. Not having that big enough container to sort of say, well, yes, there is dukkha in the world, things are imperfect, you know, I will experience things that are unsatisfactory, I will experience suffering. You know, things are impermanent, they might not be how I want them to be. But again, the impermanence also has a really positive side of change and things, new things emerging. And when things are really difficult, they're not going to be there forever. So there's something about dare I say discipline to one's practice. And I'm not somebody that like practices every single day and has done every single day of my life since I became a Buddhist. You know, I have days when I don't practice, I've had weeks when I haven't practiced, and but yet there has been a thread of, when I say practice, I mean meditation practice. And I think we can often be a bit narrow and assume practice is meditation practice, but I think it helps to be quite explicit. I've got my meditation practice, I've got my ethical practice, which are part of my broader spiritual practice. But I wonder how many people think that they practice wisdom, for instance, if we're on the threefold path of ethics. Meditation and wisdom, do you practice wisdom in your daily lives? How could you do that? And I think maybe wisdom is quite a highly charged word, but if it's just in that trying to see things as they are, trying to be with things as they really are, see into reality, you know, have that dharmic perspective, reflect on things from that dharmic perspective, maybe just reflecting, seeing impermanence, maybe being aware of this is dukkha, you know. You're experiencing it, but just having that perspective, yes, this is dukkha, you know. What effect would that have? It's interesting with all the meditation practices that are sort of seen as more Vipassana practices to help with insight and awakening. And again, for me, I think any meditation practice can be Vipassana practice and will have that element in it. But the ones that are specifically designed to help us to develop that awareness and insight, they almost always at some point include reflecting on the three lakshanas, you know, being aware of impermanence, being aware of unsatisfactoriness and suffering, and also being aware of things not being fixed, things being in process, all that kind of stuff. So Pranyanita I liked a lot of her analogies actually. There was that beautiful image of the crane or the heron, particularly on the one leg. I was thinking, having seen some of them do that, but also loving all those pictures. And it does create a real sense of stillness, doesn't it? But at one point she was talking about practicing to traverse the rock face, or athletes practicing, or musicians practicing. So yeah, I guess, well, I am a musician, even though I can go for years without actually playing my instrument. But I think it's there within me, and it's been part of my life, and maybe that's one of the things that I need to reintegrate into my life, you know, more. I've done it in lots of different ways. Because when I stopped being a musician, it was actually very traumatic, you know. I've got to the stage where I can listen to music and go to things with it, and I can play on the piano. But actually having an ongoing relationship with my viola, which for many, many years was the primary relationship in my life. I'm not there yet. It feels too charged. But I had all those years where I guess I'd be doing anything between like 2 and 6 hours practice a day, and then days when I might be doing, you know, 6 hours rehearsal and then a concert or something. But in order to get to the place where you can play and perform and play with other people, you have to put in the hours, and you have to do it in lots of different ways. Yes, there's all the technical things of, you know, learning how to do things physically, and the body has a physical memory and you just repeat it and repeat it and repeat it so it gets a sense of how to do things. But there's all the different subtleties within that. It's not like you learn how to, you know, hold your bow and that's it, or how to finger and that's it, because every piece will be different. And playing the same piece again and again and again, every performance is different, you know. But you do need to have awareness when you're learning something new. Yeah, you can look at what the notes are, when you can work out how, or what, a bit like traversing a cliff, how are the ways to get to your hand to finger so you can play all those different bits, you know, and then get that sort of practice it, you know, so that you can actually do it. And then you get to the place where you've done it enough that you can let go of thinking about it and just worry about the music and what you're trying to express. But, you know, the technique serves the creativity. You know, when I first started out, I was a bit like snooty about and dismissive of all these people who used to do all the technical studies and the scales and the exercises to get more technical proficiency. And I just kind of like wanted to go with my heart and express myself. And I think because I had a natural ability and affinity and I watched other people and learned from that, I managed to get by pretty well up to a certain point. And then it was just like, well, I didn't know. If something went well, I didn't know why it went well. If something was a complete disaster, I didn't know why it was a complete disaster. And I had no idea how to get from here to there because I hadn't actually put in the hours I needed to give myself a good technical foundation, you know. At a certain point, I had a few lessons with this really good viola player. And he wouldn't let me play any pieces of music, and he just got me to do a whole lot of technical stuff. And like in, I think, 6 weeks, I learnt more about technique than I had in about 12 years, you know. But I suppose I'm bringing that up because I think with meditation, although I do very much think it's very creative, it's very poetic, it's, you know, it's not just a tool. There is something about A, the discipline of doing it again and again, and developing the familiarity that you just sit and then, you know, in a way you're kind of in a certain space or starting space, or you've got become familiar with your mind and your emotion and how you respond and how you react and what might come up, and therefore you've got more ways of dealing it that come naturally to you. Maybe more ability to be with your body, more ability to sort of create that openness, more ability to recognize things like the hindrances, if you want to call them hindrances, and see them as opportunities for change and transformation. So it is helpful to have some knowledge, it's helpful to have some awareness, it's helpful to have some tools and techniques to bring into it that can then allow you to be more creative and that can then allow you to let go and then allow you to, in a way, create the conditions for different things to emerge, different experiences, and to be able to stay with those experiences as well, because sometimes when something's new or unfamiliar, however positive it may be, we can completely freak out or be a bit scared or we don't want to change. Yeah. And again, it's sort of being realistic about what you can cope with or what you can manage at a certain time, you know. If I was going to put on a concert or a recital, you know, I would be careful about choosing pieces that were within my technical ability. And also I had a kind of emotion, you know, I felt that I had the sort of emotion or the feeling to play them, you know. And I wouldn't be trying to play something that is my favourite piece of music but way beyond my ability, or even that might be close, you know. It's quite interesting that when you get nervous or anxious sometimes, some people really rise to the occasion. But often, yeah, you're not doing it at your best capacity, you know. So one piece of advice I got from a teacher was really good, was that basically you need to get to the place where, you know, your worst playing is good enough, you know. And just allowing for the fact that, you know, maybe sometimes you can play absolutely exquisitely, beautifully, you know, perfect in your own way performance. But once you're there in front of people, can you replicate that? And also, it's quite likely that you're not going to. You're going to be a lot worse than that. And that's okay. So it's kind of building a sort of foundation, a steady foundation, so that even when we fall back, we've got something steady. So I think, again, with the ethics, we're practicing how to be in the world, aren't we? We're practicing how to relate to ourselves and others in the world in lots of different situations, and situations are very complex, and we'll often find there's ways when we've not behaved as skillful as we want. And that's why ethics is a practice. You keep on doing it, keep on doing it, keep on doing it, and you realise, okay, I messed up there. And then again, if you bring in that reflection, or even if you bring in, say, confession as a practice, then you do a whole lot of, well, what were the conditions that led to me behaving in that? You know, what exactly did I do that was unethical? It's not just I felt bad about what I did, but can I be more specific? Did I break a particular precept? You know, what was it that was unskillful? You know, was I being unkind and cruel? Was I being selfish? Was I, you know, not being honest? You know, was I not being mindful? There's all different ways that we can be unskillful. So it's sometimes good to be a bit precise about what actually was happening. And then have that intention not to do it again. And yes, we probably will do it again, but if we keep having that intention and we keep looking, we'll probably find that we're getting more and more skillful along the way, and that our attitudes towards ethics shift, and that our default, our natural way of being, you know, our default ethics are probably a lot better than they were before. It's quite common that people who've been practicing for a while suddenly start feeling really, a bit tender, a bit ashamed about stuff they'd done in the past, which they didn't think at all was unethical, just because they've got more ethical sensitivity through their practice. And in the same way with meditation, I think where I'm at is I really like to just be with what's there, but actually you have to be aware of what's there. You know, it's very easy to sit there in a sort of like mental soup or just drifting away, you know, and not aware of what's been happening during a meditation. And you don't have to be writing down or thinking play by play, this happened in my meditation, but just have a certain awareness of, well, this is what's happening when I started, oh, and this came up, or this came up, and this is what happened. Because often a lot happens during a sit, and we just maybe focus, particularly if we're a bit critical of ourselves, we might just focus on, oh, well, I was very distracted there, or, you know, I found myself feeling envy or hatred, and then giving ourselves a bad time, rather than thinking about all the other things that happened in the meditation. And maybe there were some moments of peace and stillness, and maybe there was just a time when we were with the breath, and we were, you know, we often don't clock those, we don't value those. So it's good to be aware of all those things. I mean, as a musician, particularly like if you're playing in an orchestra or something, or I used to love playing in opera, and then you've got a whole other dimension with the singers on the stage that you can't see, but they're playing and they're doing all their musical things, and they tend to be completely unpredictable, so every performance is even more different than normal. But you have to have an awareness of, yeah, how to play your instrument, of looking at the notes and what's happening. You have to have some awareness of the conductor, awareness of all the other musicians, whatever. So you're in the moment, but you've also got a, and you've got quite a tight field of mindfulness, being aware of very specific things, but you've also got this really broad field of awareness, of sensing what's happening, whatever people are doing, so that you can respond and you can be together with them. And also it really helps to be aware of where you're at, you know, if you're, how grounded you are, what's, you know, what's going on in your mind, in your heart when you're playing. And trying to be more present, more mindful in what you're doing. Because it is quite possible to, I know because I've done it, play a whole concert when you're thinking about something else. And it's possible to be really, really in there and it be a total experience and total sense of connection with others and what's being communicated, and also something quite spiritual. It can be really amazing. But I think that's the same with our lives and with anything that we do, actually. It has that potential, you know, to be very mundane and ordinary and we don't think about it at all. But even the very mundane and ordinary can become an opportunity for insight, an opportunity for practice, you know. Particularly if, like me, you think basically you're trying to cultivate more kindness and more awareness, well, almost anything we do gives us that opportunity. Yeah. Every time you sit, you have an opportunity to be a bit kinder to yourself, you know, a bit more aware of what's going on, you know, and whether that's in terms of what's happening in your body, in your heart, in your mind, that's always there. And why am I saying all that? Well, I think all of that helps create those conditions for equanimity, basically. And for reaching that place where we're not clinging so much. And if we can kind of loosen, or maybe be a bit, have that perspective that whatever's going on, again, we don't get identified with the personal drama of our lives. That's not to sort of dismiss what's going on in our lives as just being dramatic, but there's something about also having another perspective of seeing things are arising, passing away, things are impermanent. Think of a wave in the sea. Seen in one way, it seems to have a distinct entity, an end and a beginning, a birth and a death. Seen in another way, the wave itself doesn't really exist, but is just the behaviour of water, empty of any separate entity, but full of water. So when you really think about the wave, you come to realise that is something made temporarily possible by wind and water, and is dependent on a set of constantly changing conditions. You also realise that every wave is related to every other wave. So that's a reading from Sogyal Rinpoche, but to me that encapsulates so much of I suppose what I'm trying to do in cultivating wisdom is try to get that kind of perspective, you know, where I can be aware of the waves of my experience, my emotions, my thoughts, the external things happening. And they do have a distinct entity, whatever you would call it. And they do have beginnings, ends, all those sorts of things. But in a way, they're all just manifestations of impermanence and process that's happening around me and within me. So if I can be aware of that whole process and just in tune, align myself more with reality, then I can create more of that sense of being a lake rather than a little glass of water. You know, to be able to hold and respond to whatever's arising within me and outside of me. So that's why, you know, for me, equanimity needs to be rooted in that Dharmic perspective. As Thera says, equanimity, the perfect, unshakable balance of mind rooted in insight. So, again, I think just being a little bit light, being a little bit playful with stuff can be helpful. And I know when I did the exercise the first day, and I suggested that we all find maybe some of the things that we maybe get a little bit attached to. And when I say attached, I mean, I think craving and aversion are both the same, really. Other sides of the same coin. It's like either we don't want it or we want it, but there's still that attachment there, there's still that feeling there. So you could be putting, you know, something that you like or something you don't like, you could put there and then just say it's emptiness, you know. So I am going to invite you to either go back to the ones you did or see if you can find some more, but also to be a bit playful with it and a bit silly with it, okay? So I want you to maybe write down a few, and then after that, make it into a little song, okay? And this is inspired by Pranidita. So for instance, I could say, well, what was I saying? Well, I think I'm going to go back to potatoes or only emptiness, because I know that she's cooking some roast potatoes, which I'm very excited about. Oh, I could say, what don't I like? I'm sorry, my brain is going blank. All right.
Stuff on the porridge.
Oh, that's right, yes. I don't like fancy porridge. I like porridge simple, not with all the fixings and the... Yes. It's like, yes. So I suppose I could say, yeah, or I could say, what don't I like? Gosh, my brain is going. Anyways, so okay, I'll start with more things that I like and I'm attached to, and then maybe something else will emerge. So, well, actually, I could say things that I like. Meditation is only emptiness. Doctor Who is only emptiness. That's disappointing, actually. That's one of those things, I always have this idea it's going to be better than it is, so it's always dukkha for me. So, Doctor Who is only emptiness. Jane Austen is only emptiness. Chocolate is only emptiness. Anyway, you get the idea. So I create a few of those, and then when I've finished and we're all in our own places on mute, and you can also stop the video if you don't want anyone to see it, but we're going to have a little bit of time where we're going to learn this refrain, and then after we say one out loud, we do the refrain, and then we say another out loud and say the refrain. So the refrain, which we can all learn, is diggy diggy do, diggy do do. Okay? Diggy diggy do, diggy do do. 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 So you can practice that if you want. So I could say, yeah, potatoes are only emptiness. Diggy diggy do, diggy do do. Meditation is only emptiness. Diggy diggy do, diggy do do. Chocolate is only emptiness. Yes? So it's just an experiment. So you've got 15 minutes to, We'll say 10 minutes to be writing it and then 5 minutes to play about with it.
Oh, Delilah, one more time on the Diggy Dodos, please.
Sorry, I can't hear you loud. Can you speak a bit louder?
I said, Delilah, one more time on the Diggy Dodos, please.
Did you hear that?
One more time on the Diggy
Dodos. Okay. Diggy, diggy, do, diggy, do, do. Maybe we should do it like a mantra for a little while so you'll get it in your head.
Diggy, and I diggy, just had do, pleasure diggy, about do, hearing
do. You do it. Diggy, diggy, do, diggy, do, do. 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 You can jazz it up if you want, but that's the basic thing. Diggy, diggy, do, diggy, do, do. Diggy, diggy, do, diggy, do, do. Okay, so you now have 10 minutes for reflection on things that are emptiness, and then 5 minutes in your own privacy to make them into a little song and to perform the song to yourself. And then we'll come back together. So that will be at 11:35.
Recording in progress.
So, welcome back. And we're just going to have a bit of space to maybe share, explore what it was like doing that exercise and the thing that arose for you that you became aware of, responses, reactions, thoughts. Be really interesting to hear. And we are still recording, so again, if you don't want to be on the recording, you can post any questions or anything or share anything in the chat. And of course, feel free to have your video on or off. Though it is nice seeing your faces, I must say. Okay, so does anybody feel like starting us off? And perhaps someone who hasn't shared in the big group could do that today. It'd be nice to hear from some people we haven't heard from.
Hi, Bodilina.
Hi, Chris.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity, and I found it quite helpful. And my honest reaction is initially I thought this is all rather silly. I'm a stickler for process and seriousness in Buddhism, and but I very quickly realised that openness and emptiness are kind of cousins in a sense, and actually how appropriate that. Particularly as we're in the UK and wordplay and humour is a massive part of how we relate to each other, how appropriate that we should follow something we struggle with or attach to with something that's very open. And I kind of got into my diggy, diggy, do, diggy, do, do. And I basically created a refrain, and I had various things like, you know, guilt and shame are emptiness, diggy, diggy, do, diggy, do, do. Not understanding the Heart Sutra is emptiness, diggy, diggy, do, do, because I don't understand the Heart Sutra, I never really have. New Year's resolutions are emptiness, diggy, diggy, do, diggy, do, do. What I may or may not achieve in the rest of my life is emptiness, diggy, diggy, do, diggy, do, do. And I don't know, I suppose it had a quality of, on the one hand, like kind of almost gently mocking the attachment I've had prior to the refrain, but also at the same time kind of offering and dignifying it. So not mocking it in a pejorative sense or vindictive sense, but just kind of saying, this attachment exists, I'm acknowledging it, but this is part of the human condition to kind of attach to things that are going to cause me suffering, ultimately. So yeah, I found it, again, one of these things where there's a kind of barrier of prejudice that I have to get over. But then once I actually just do what's suggested, there's a positive mental state or ability to nudge myself into a unexpectedly positive mental state. So yeah, that was my experience.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Chris. And yeah, I loved a lot of what you said and a lot of what you shared. And actually, I went into some of the same things like you. I had guilt and shame as being emptiness as part of my thing. But I really, yes, that whole thing, I really liked that you had that. It wasn't mocking, it was just sort of acknowledging with a sort of like, you know, awareness, with a kind of lightness that you felt like you kind of got what I was hoping it might be like. But of course, it may have been like different for other people. And I like what you said about openness and being cousins to emptiness. That felt quite, actually quite profound to me. Anyway, thank you. Right. So is there anyone else who'd like to go, or is there anything in the chat that I need to know? Because I can't see from here.
Hi, Bodilila. This is Sujani.
Oh, hi, Sujani.
Thank you for that. I found myself, I'm not very good at play, so it was quite a helpful exercise, I think. And yeah, I don't know if I can share much more than that, but I think on the whole, I can take life terribly seriously. So sometimes it's just nice to have that light touch. Things more like, particularly when I go into ego, I think, yeah, things can feel a bit more serious and a bit more. Yeah. And thank you, Chris. There's a lot of what you've said that I decided as well.
Well, thank you. And it's been lovely having you here. And yes, I used to find it really hard to play. I was so self-conscious as well. So I can relate to that, but I'm glad that you managed to this morning. Anybody found it excruciating and hated it?
Hi. Hello, it's been the chitter.
Hi.
Hi. No, I didn't find it excruciating, but there's a funny echo, isn't there?
Yeah, a little bit, but we can still hear you.
Okay. Yeah, no, I found it really, really useful. I mean, when you were saying it, I was thinking, what? But doing it, it felt it had quite an effect on my heart response to those things that I put in. And had a sense of how much I solidify around some things. I make them seem solid, you know, either because I really like them or I really don't like them. And something about singing it and making it fun and seemed to become lighter, you know, and almost the sort of solidness that I create around them sort of dissolving. So, yeah, I really, and it was fun.
Great, great. I'm glad I had fun. And yeah, it's interesting because we have been exploring, haven't we, about space and creating a little bit more spaciousness or loosening around things. And I do think fun and playfulness can be one way of doing that. And I'm sure you're not the only one that does that solidifying. I know I do. Yeah. But thank you very much for sharing that. And yes, again, lovely to have you on the retreat. I mean, I found for myself some of it was like quite superficial. Things like crisps are only emptiness. Then I got into some of the emotions, like the guilt and the shame are only emptiness. And then things like team dynamics are only emptiness and things like that. And but also some of the sort of more, yeah. Anyway, I'm just wondering if anybody feels like, if they don't feel like having a whole share, but you could even post in your chat some of the things you thought were emptiness. Maybe you could even have a group song, but I don't know, that's a bit much, isn't it? Cool, you couldn't do it over Zoom anyways. But anyway, anybody else feel like sharing anything? And it doesn't have to be just around this, actually. It could be around whatever you've been noticing, experiencing on the retreat. And also, even if you have spoken before, I didn't mean to say you couldn't speak now. I just wanted to encourage some other people to come in. Ego is only emptiness. Diggy, 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 diggy.
Hello, Bodhi Leela, it's Liz here.
Oh, hi, Liz.
Yeah, I noticed I was writing different things today than I was writing on the first day. I think I tried to do that intentionally. I really enjoyed the singing and playing. It was great. But I also touched on some deeper stuff, and one of them is around being able to breathe freely is only emptiness. And I didn't realise I was holding that one. And I think it's something to do with COVID and a lung condition, but it actually, it's true as well. It's sort of like, it's all true, isn't it? The lighthearted stuff and the deeper stuff is only emptiness.
Lighthearted stuff and the deepest stuff is only emptiness. That just feels like you've encapsulated everything. It's, yeah.
Thank you.
And thank you for sharing that. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, just doing a silly little exercise that, and then we come up with our own insights and our own awareness and echoing, you know, other teachings that we may have come across, because we have all that wisdom within us as well, if we allow ourselves to listen to it. Kamini.
I had a little exploration of not just the stuff that was on my list, but my relationship to the stuff was emptiness. Mm-hmm. So I had... one that I liked was nostalgia is emptiness, and also I had routines like going to bed is emptiness and getting up is emptiness. I found it really, really good fun actually to explore.
Yes, thank you. And it's interesting, isn't it, that we all come with our different perspectives and our different things, and it all becomes part of a whole. And it's very like all the Tibetans who say everything is emptiness, isn't it? And they literally say everything is emptiness, and in a way we're just doing that in our own way with our own lives as they are, which may be different. So I think sometimes we can get a little bit intimidated when we come across these teachings or these gurus or these readings or texts, what does it mean? I can't understand it. What are all these emptiness, perfection of wisdom, blah, blah, blah. And yet on another level, we just know it. We've just been demonstrating we know it, doesn't it? Kind of. Everything, however mundane, everything, however profound, internal, external objects, thoughts, responses, reactions, it's all emptiness.
I keep having thoughts from the first time we did that to now, of that Shakespeare quote of all the world is just a stage and people come on and play their parts and just with their masks, but it's all one big kind of illusion, I suppose, and that keeps coming back through to me.
Yes.
Exactly.
Why am I echoing
that? But why?
I think that's
exactly it.
Is that what Shakespeare meant by it?
Well, I'm not Shakespeare, so I don't know what he meant by it. But I think, again, with any writer, every artist. Maybe it's everyone else muted.
I'm the only one, but.
Okay, does that make me better? Yeah, okay, maybe if you just unmute when you speak then. I think there's something about how we each respond and interpret something. So for some people, they might take it completely literally, but there's all those possibilities of understanding. And I think the Dharma's not just for Buddhists. The Dharma is the truth. The Dharma is reality and it's out there and all kinds of people may be in contact with the Dharma, may express the Dharma, you know, have Dharmic insights, you know. So I would say some, you know, one of the reasons why Shakespeare for me is so resonant is because I think he does, on lots of levels, metaphorical, spiritual, or even just like going into the depths of human beings and all the terrible things we can do as well as everything else, that there's a sort of truth there, there's a reality there that he's captured something, you know. So I think, yes, all the world's a stage and not merely players is so much like the great display of emptiness that you might hear talked about by a Tibetan Lama, for instance. And when you have a, you know, someone who's done a painting and it, you can see, you know, they've done it with so much, they've just captured something that you know is just really true, really real, you know. That's seeing things as they really are, isn't it? Someone writes a song expressing something that's really true to them. You know, that's again, that's being with reality, seeing things where they are. And we can respond, we respond to things that are real, I think. We respond to things that are true, whether they've got words or images or whether they're people or whether it's nature or, you know, or am I just saying, I don't know. Anyway, that's what I'm thinking at the moment. And that is also emptiness. And my worrying about whether I make sense is only emptiness. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Sue?
No, I was just thinking Diggy Diggy Do when you just said that, and I was just thinking of, I think it's because of my speaker, just thinking of Shakespeare's little funny tunes and the fall that he has coming on in between those major scenes. It's that kind of light relief as well, and very playful, isn't it?
hadn't thought of that, but yes.
He might have sung Diggy Diggy Do, Diggy Do Do as well.
Well, there's something about nonsense, isn't it? But I must say, I got that from Tranya Nita, because, can I say this? Yes, I don't know, she was talking about her mum, one of her mum's favourite songs having this refrain, Diggy Diggy Do, Diggy Do Do, and it just stuck in my brain. So I just nicked it when I was thinking about how to make this a little bit more playful. So, but now it's on my brain. So, still, there's worse things to have on your brain. At least it's not a Christmas song or hymn. Well, actually, there's some very good Christmas songs, but the ones that they play in shops tend not to be those ones. Okay. Maybe one more person and then we'll end this.
Sheetal has raised her hand, Regina.
Okay, Sheetal, go for it.
Okay, hello everybody. I'm echoing as well. Can you still hear me, everybody?
I can hear you very well, yeah.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so I wrote my poem and then when we were all talking more about emptiness, I had kind of like a revelation around that's kind of how I feel about money. And I wrote down money is emptiness, like excessive money, chasing paper. Whenever I felt that before, I couldn't explain the feeling, but that feeling is emptiness. So that was a bit of a revelation.
So it was a revelation, and how does it feel having had that revelation? Can you sort of stick with it and stay with it?
Yeah. And then I wrote down like flashiness, emptiness, superficialness, if that's a word. It's just nice to kind of put a name to that feeling of like how I feel around money. Which may be very different to everybody else in my circle.
Yeah, it's often challenging, isn't it, when people in our circles are different or have got different views and what we might be feeling or thinking or seeing might be perceived as, you know, well, the Buddha talked about it being a topsy-turvy world and, you know, people seeing us as fools or whatever. But I think, you know, that can happen within Buddhist sanghas as much as anywhere else. So I think it is really important to honour that, actually, to see that that's there and acknowledge that, and that it can be a challenge and it can be... Yeah, I mean, I think it's great that you had that revelation, that insight. And did you want to say anything more?
Just good. It makes me feel peaceful.
Makes you feel sorry, a bit of distraction there.
Peaceful.
Oh, great. Well, that is very interesting, isn't it? Because in this, you know, because I was kind of thinking, well, I'm doing all of this, and part of it is around still that idea of wanting to get to more peace and stillness, spaciousness. And as you know, there's different ways to get to that. And I was thinking, okay, I'm going to, you know, we've had all this stillness yesterday, and now I'm doing something that's a bit more discursive, a bit more silly, and I'm changing the mood of the retreat. So it's really nice to hear that it took you to a place of peacefulness. So thank you. Okay. Enough of that then. So we're going to end with some practice, and just to reassure you, we will still be having a session in the afternoon that will be unled and unspoken, and hopefully get us into some quiet and stillness. And today we're not actually having groups to try and sort of give us a bit more of an opportunity to go into that place. So if I'm just going to remind you now and at the end to come at 4 rather than 4:30, and we will have a longer session. But for now, I'd say if you can manage, we'll go straight into it. But if you need to go off and pop to the loo or something, that's fine, because we're going to do some lying down. And up until now, we haven't really been having many led meditations. I think only just the one on the first evening, didn't we? But I am going to lead us, I don't know how much that will be led, but it will be led in a lying down body scan, basically. Or at least the encouragement is to lie down. If you feel happier, it works better for you to be sitting, that's fine. And one reason we're doing that is because, again, with this idea of seeing things as they are, aligning ourselves with reality to get that dharmic perspective for the cultivation of wisdom, it's not all, you know, ideas and, you know, when you've done years and years of practice, then you can get to that place. It's with us the whole time. And one really good place of exploring the three Lakshanas is through the body. I mean, there's so much you can say about the body. I mean, it's how we live in our bodies, don't we? We interact with the world in our bodies, and it's the interface between inner and outer, and how we can communicate with others, how we can experience the world. And it holds our whole life, doesn't it? From the time we're born to the time we're ending. And from a baby to whatever. And all our experiences are held within the body. There's some kind of memory within the body will have an impact on the body. And the body is always changing. You know, cells are dying, cells are being born. We're getting older, or, you know, what we eat, what we do, whether we exercise, those all have an effect, those conditions, but our body is always in process, is always changing. So there is that sense of insubstantiality in a way that we can experience through the body, and also the impermanence of, you know, you've got an ache one day and maybe it's not there the next day, or maybe you're feeling a lot of energy and then it's not there, or maybe feeling really tired. You know, how we experience being in our body changes from moment to moment as well. And also we experience dukkha, we experience discomfort, pain, suffering, or even just irritations. You've got an itch or something a bit unsatisfactory in your body. So actually just being with our body, we can use that as a way of, you know, experiencing the three Lakshanas. And yeah, so it can be both a nice, relaxing thing to do, but it can also be an opportunity for some awareness and insight. But as I said, we can't think ourselves to wisdom or insight, and sometimes making the effort is too much. So don't try and be aware of this. Don't try and have any insights. Don't try and make any progress whatsoever. And if you fall asleep, that's totally fine. It's probably what you need to do. So just bringing that kindness as well as that awareness to your body. So I think I am going to lie down, so you won't see me. So let's have 5 minutes to get ourselves into position. And maybe you could mute it so it's not so noisy. Listening to the sound gradually fading away, and sound, like all other senses and sense experiences, is a way of experiencing the external world within our bodies and within our minds. So like the breath can be a way of being in both worlds at the same time, seeing them become one, internal, external. So just noticing what it feels like to be lying down, your body in this different posture. And feeling the ground beneath you, supporting you, receiving, holding your weight. Getting a broad awareness of the whole body, inhabiting your whole body from the head down to the feet and the toes, including the arms, the hands, the fingers. So having a sense of the length and the breadth of your body. Of your body, in particular noticing where you're in contact with the floor, or any other parts of your body supported by cushions, bolsters. So feeling support at the back of the head, the support back of the knees, allowing your body just to rest. Being a body, being a resting body, you stopped, you're still, you're not going anywhere. So allowing the body to relax, be open and receptive to whatever's going on, whatever whatever you're experiencing right now. Maybe having an awareness of any sensations or movements in the body as you breathe. Noticing all the different places in your body, you can feel the breath. And each breath is here just for a moment. And then gone. So as you breathe in, each breath is an opportunity to be aware of impermanence. Also flow and process, one breath following another. Nothing is fixed or still. Everything is in process the whole time, including your breathing body. Noticing if there are any sensations of discomfort. Maybe there's an itch, an ache, maybe there's some tension. Maybe there's some pain. Noticing the actual sensation. Be with it, see if it changes. Sometimes we fix an idea in our head. I've got a backache, neck ache, I've got a headache. But what are all the actual sensations you're experiencing right now in that area? Are there any sensations in the body that are pleasant? They all come and go. Pleasant, unpleasant. And even if there are some that are neither pleasant or unpleasant, sensations arise and pass away constantly in the body. Even if something seems fairly constant now, if you think back to early in the day, early in the week, a month ago, maybe there are things that you were feeling, experiencing then, that you're not experiencing now. Maybe there are new sensations now you didn't experience.
It's a them. Maybe you're hungry. Maybe you're hot or cold. Maybe there's an itch, an ache. That's here right now, wasn't there before. Just bringing awareness to the sensations you're experiencing now. Within the body or through the senses. Smells, tastes, sounds. If your eyes are closed, different experience to the eyes open. So noticing sense experience or lack of sense experience, changing sense experience in the body. And any unpleasant sensations, any discomfort or pain, well, that is dukkha, experienced right now in your body, moment by moment. Our bodies too are part of the conditioned world. Conditions of the world have an impact on our bodies. Create the conditions for our bodies to come into being. At some point, those bodies will cease to be. So in your own way, just bringing awareness to different areas and parts of the body, your experience. If it's too much, just broaden out to the whole body. If it's too much being focused on the body, then just allow yourself to have a different emphasis or shift. Perhaps being aware of sounds, or the breath. Sounds like the breath, constantly changing Yeah, they're gone. Can only be aware of a sound happening right now. So you could just allow yourself to be aware of sounds coming and going, changing soundscape if it feels too much. Focusing on your body. But just being open and receptive to the flow of experience. Just seeing if you can bring kindness to whatever's arising in your awareness, in your experience. Even just a little bit kinder than normal. Body is so linked to our mental emotional states, to our energetic states. So just allowing yourself to be aware of whatever's going on, however you are right now. All of your experience, everything in process, everything changing moment by moment. we're coming to the end of this session. So if you want to stay just lying down, you can feel free to do that. Or if you want to move back to a sitting position, just being kind and tender with your body, careful with your body as you move from one position to another. Okay, so as I said, we're coming to the end of this session. Thank you all for coming and practicing and playing with me. And just to, I suppose, say what we're going to be doing for the rest of the day, because it is slightly different to what we have been doing. So we have a session 4 till 5:30. So you're making... session 4 till 5:30, and rather than having groups, we're just going to have a whole extended session from 4 till 5:30 of silent practice, short practices, sitting, standing, walking, and actually lying down this time. All the positions the Buddha said that we could practice in. And that'll be an opportunity to go back to a bit more quietness and stillness. 7 till 8:30, we have another session, which will include some meditation and ritual. And just bearing in mind it is New Year's Eve, we are moving into the new year, so there will be a bit of time of reflecting, looking back. And I think either in that session or the late night session, there'll be an opportunity to maybe another way of loosening, letting go of stuff by writing down confessions and things. And we can't do it here, but you might want to, if you want to symbolically do it, find a way of burying or burning things that you write down you want to let go of, yeah? There'll be some meditation and mantra chanting for sure in the 7 till 8:30 session. Maybe even a simple puja. And then we have the late night session, 10 till 12, where probably more like 10 till 5 past, 10 past 12, where we're seeing in the new year. And I don't know, but I feel like I want to do a sevenfold puja during that period, so we will. But there'll also be time for meditation and reflection on that sense of letting go and welcoming the new year. And then tomorrow, Pranunisa is going to be leading a day in this new year. And so we'll still be keeping with the theme, but we'll also be acknowledging the fact that it is a quite significant time. So any questions on that? Because I know our communications haven't always been that clear. I think the main thing is that if you're somebody that hasn't liked going to the groups, turn up at 4, not 4:30 today. And that if you have the stamina and you've paced yourself and you want to see in the new year, we do have a session from 10 o'clock tonight. And do feel free to unmute yourself, say goodbye, or to post message in the chat, and hope to see you all later on today.